Happy Friday, everyone. It is Friday, August 21st, 2026. I'm Linda with the Talking Information Center. Thanks for joining me for the next 30 minutes reading the Brockton Enterprise. I'm going to start on the front page. Block Party features food, activities, and giveaways by Kathy Bassa. As summer winds down, New Life South Coast Brockton is inviting the community to its fourth annual End of Summer Block Party, a family-friendly event featuring free food, activities, and giveaways. The event will take place from 2 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, August 29th, at West Middle School at 271 West Street in Brockton, with food and activities available at no cost to attendees, according to organizers. New Life South Coast Brockton pastor Tim Feagans said the afternoon will feature family-friendly activities and games, free food, live music, and community support, along with giveaways of backpacks, groceries, gift cards, and other items. The block party has become an annual opportunity for the church to connect with residents and serve the Brockton community, according to Feagans. One of the ways we get to serve our city is through our block party, Feagans said in a written statement. This is a completely free event, open to everyone, where we come together to bless our community in tangible ways, he said. Feagans said the block party will be a family-friendly event with something for everyone. Children of all ages are invited to enjoy inflatables, games, bubble stations, relay races, and more throughout the afternoon. Backpacks, gift cards, pallets of groceries, and household goods will be given away starting at 2 p.m. while supplies last, Feagans said in the statement. The festivities continue at 3 p.m. with live music, giveaways, personal stories, free food, and an encouraging message designed to remind people that they are loved and we are here, Feagans said. My wife and I were both raised in Brockton, so this city holds a special place in our hearts, Feagans said in the statement. When our pastor, Pastor Marco DeBarros of New Life South Coast in New Bedford, asked if we would consider being part of launching a church in our hometown, we were thrilled by the opportunity. Almost 4 years later, we are still just as excited and in awe by all that God is doing. For us, this isn't just an event. It's an opportunity to love our city and introduce people to the hope we've found in Jesus, Feagans said. New Life South Coast Brockton is located at 684 Crescent Street. The church is part of the New Life South Coast Network and serves residents in Brockton and surrounding communities through worship services, outreach programs, and community events. The church holds Sunday services at 10:30 a.m. with childcare available during the service. Our mission is simple, to love God and love people, Feagans said in the statement. We want to create a place where people who may not know Jesus can come, experience his love for themselves. Next up on the front page, Brockton Mayor may face criminal charge by Amelia Stern and Chris Helms. A clerk magistrate found probable cause on August 14th to charge Brockton Mayor Moises Rodriguez with assault and battery stemming from his alleged touching of a Brockton High School student during a parade. The mayor has not yet been formally charged as of Tuesday, August 19th, but even if he is, City Council President Jack Lally and City Clerk Tim Cruz confirmed to the Enterprise on Monday, August 17th, that nothing in the city charter or state law would remove Rodriguez from office or even pause his duties. When asked directly whether a mayor charged with a crime would continue to serve through arraignment, trial, and even after a conviction, Cruz, an authority on Brockton government processes, confirmed that is the case. Brockton's charter contains no impeachment process and no recall provision, and only physical incarceration, Cruz said, would functionally take Rodriguez out of City Hall. What does Brockton's charter say? The city charter's only mechanism for shifting power away from a mayor applies to physical or medical incapacity and not legal jeopardy. Under Massachusetts general laws, as incorporated into the city charter, if a mayor is absent or unable from any cause temporarily to perform his duties, the city council president assumes the role of acting mayor, but with limited authority. That provision depends entirely on whether Rodriguez remains able to physically perform the job and not on the outcome of any legal proceedings, apart from a potential jail sentence. If he's charged, it wouldn't preclude him from doing his duties anyways, Cruz said. After conviction, it would depend on if he is jailed, which I don't suspect. Changing that structure would not be simple either. According to Cruz, the charter functions as state law for the city, meaning any amendment would require approval both from Brockton voters and the state legislature. The bar is deliberately high, he said, given that the charter is how the city was originally incorporated. It's not an easy thing to change, Cruz said, nor should it be. Brockton is not alone in lacking a recall mechanism, but it stands apart from some of its neighbors. Unlike Brockton, nearby communities including Fall River, Stoughton, Bridgewater, and Marshfield allow recall elections. Fall River voters have pursued recall efforts against elected officials before, including one that recently failed on procedural grounds, and a recall campaign is currently underway in Marshfield, targeting the select board chair. What happens if Brockton's mayor leaves office? Rodriguez himself became acting mayor after Mayor Bill Carpenter died in office on July 3, 2019. Carpenter died just over 6 months before his term would have ended on January 6th of 2020, and Rodriguez, a city councilor at the time, was voted mayor by his fellow councilors. If a true vacancy were to open up, if, for example, Rodriguez is jailed or resigns, how the position is filled depends on timing. If it's in the first year of a mayor's two-year term, a citywide election would be called and anyone eligible to run could do so in that scenario. In the second year, a sitting city councilor becomes acting mayor through the end of the term. If the vacancy occurs more than 6 months before the term ends, councilors choose one of their own. And if it's within 6 months of the end of the term, the sitting council president automatically fills the role. Rodriguez began his first term on January 5th, 2026, and it runs through January 3rd, 2028. None of that machinery is in play now, and it would only be activated if the office became vacant, which a criminal charge alone does not trigger. And last up on the front page, Brockton Schools Launch New Communication Platform by Beth McDermott. Brockton Public Schools is launching Parent Square, a district-wide communications platform designed to bring school, classroom, and family communications into one place. The platform will serve as a single source for newsletters, messages, calendar listings, and other updates, according to a community announcement. District officials said the move will replace multiple communication tools with one system intended to provide more consistent and accessible engagement for families and staff. Parent Square offers automatic translation into families' preferred languages, including English, Haitian Creole, French, Spanish, and Portuguese, while allowing users to receive information through email, text messages, voice notifications, or the mobile app. Our hope is that Parent Square will fundamentally change how our schools and families engage with one another, Superintendent Priya Taliani said. For the first time, BPS can offer families access to more than recurring school newsletters and district-wide alerts, but also classroom updates and individualized connections between educators and families related to individual students' learning. Through the platform, families can customize notification settings and participate in one-to-one conversations with educators. Brockton Public Schools said Parent Square will become its district-supported communication platform for school leaders and educators. The district is consolidating several third-party tools into a single resource intended to help families remain connected to schools and classrooms. District officials said the change is intended to make information more accessible, timely, and responsive to families' communication preferences. The platform is also part of a broader effort to strengthen family engagement. According to the announcement, district leaders cited research linking parent involvement with improved student behavior and stronger academic outcomes, along with feedback from district staff about opportunities to improve communication with families. Families do not need to download the Parent Square mobile application to begin using the service. Parents and guardians can register by visiting parentsquare.com/sign-in and entering the email address or phone number associated with their student's profile. The Parent Square application is available through Apple's App Store and the Google Play Store for users who prefer mobile access. Brockton Public Schools has also created resources to help families learn about the transition and registration process. Additional information is available at bpsma.org/parent-square. Next up, unemployment claims decline, suggesting stability in labor market, from Reuters. The number of Americans filing claims for unemployment benefits slipped last week, suggesting the labor market remains stable despite a surprise drop in employment in July, and leaving the Federal Reserve in position to keep its focus on containing inflation. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits fell 6,000 to a seasonally adjusted 206,000 for the week ended August 15th, from the prior week's upwardly revised 212,000, the Labor Department said on August 20th. Economists polled by Reuters had forecast 210,000 claims for the latest week. Some economists had expected an uptick in claims from states affected hardest by recent wildfires, such as Oregon and Washington, but the report showed no evidence of that. Advanced measures of new claims in both states fell last week. Jobless benefits claims appear for now to be anchored in the lower end of their 189,000 to 230,000 range for this year, indicating that layoffs remain low even if hiring is soft. The latest level is notably lower than it was at this time in each of the last 3 years, emblematic of a low-hire, low-fire job market. While the United States shed 23,000 jobs in July, the loss was centered in local government education, and the private sector added 30,000 jobs. An aging population driving a wave of retirements and President Donald Trump's immigration policies are shrinking the size of the workforce and allowing a lower level of job creation to keep the unemployment rate steady. The U.S. jobless rate of 4.1% remains near historically low levels. Demand for workers remains soft, but the supply of workers has slowed even more, leaving the labor market roughly in balance, Matthew Martin, senior U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, said. The August 20th report covers the survey week for the employment report for August. While it was 17,000 higher than in the same week for July, which was the lowest level of new claims since 1969, economists saw little to be concerned about from the latest data. Despite the favorable comparisons, July payrolls fell, Jefferies' chief U.S. economist Thomas Simon said. Suffice to say, using claims to forecast payrolls has been fairly unsuccessful for a while now, and that's not likely to change this month. Labor market stability, together with signs of mild inflation, if sustained, could allow the Fed to keep the interest rates unchanged in September. That remains the current market expectation, despite inflation still running above the Fed's 2% target for 5 years now. U.S. debt crosses $40 trillion threshold, doubling across Trump, Biden presidencies. By David Lauder and Jacob Bogaj for Reuters. In Washington, total U.S. debt has topped $40 trillion for the first time, the Treasury Department said August 19th, drawing fresh warnings that a fiscal crisis is brewing as ballooning costs for social safety net programs and interest payments far outstrip revenues held back by tax cuts. The Treasury's latest daily cash and debt balances statement showed total public debt outstanding at $40.047 trillion on August 18th, a total that includes Treasury securities held by the public of $32.266 trillion and intragovernmental debt holdings of $7.782 trillion. The federal government's IOU has now more than doubled in less than a decade, from $19.95 trillion when President Donald Trump was sworn in for the first time in January 2017. Roughly one-third of that increase occurred during 2 years of frantic government borrowing to fund the COVID-19 pandemic responses undertaken by Trump and former President Joe Biden, while the fiscal policy choices of both presidents combined with long-running tax and spending imbalances account for the rest. Budget watchdog groups have anticipated crossing the threshold for weeks and issued stark warnings that a full-blown debt crisis could erupt unless lawmakers confront an unsustainable fiscal outlook and raise taxes, cut spending, or both. $40 trillion of debt doesn't exist solely on the government's ledgers. It is felt throughout the economy and finds its way to the pocketbooks of people one way or another, said Maya McGinnis, president of the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. The more we borrow, the more we exacerbate inflation, squeeze out other priorities in the budget, and leave ourselves vulnerable to emergencies at home and turmoil abroad, McGinnis said in a statement just after the Treasury data was released. She said the $40 trillion figure was reached less than 5 months after debt reached $39 trillion and has quadrupled in less than 20 years after taking until 1981 to reach $1 trillion for the first time. Global creditors may be growing weary, with demand from foreign investors holding nearly one-third of treasuries declining over the past year. Days after a $25 billion auction of 30-year Treasury bonds went off at the highest yield since 2021, yields on so-called long bonds on August 18th hit their highest levels in nearly two decades as investors demanded greater compensation in the face of hefty U.S. government bond issuance. Yields move inversely to bond prices. On August 19th, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent took a bold step to push long bond yields back down, announcing a doubling of buyback sizes for 10 to 30-year treasuries to at least $4 billion per operation. Higher treasury yields at the longer end tend to push up interest rates for mortgages, car, and commercial loans. With the mountain of debt showing no signs of abating, Trump, on August 19th, repeated his frequent demand for lower rates. Asked at the White House whether Americans should worry about bond market volatility, Trump said, quote, "I don't think so at all. I think we have a very powerful country, and we're powering through these ridiculous interest rates. They're ridiculous. Look, when our country is strong, interest rates should go down." The Treasury recently reported the fourth highest monthly deficit in U.S. history, $432 billion for July, as tariff refunds turned customs receipts negative for the third month in a row, and outlays for Social Security and Medicare benefits for seniors continued to grow. The deficit for the first 10 months of fiscal 2026 has already exceeded the total gap for all of fiscal 2025, with 2 months to go in the current fiscal year. Trump has largely ignored the dwindling number of fiscal hawks in his Republican Party, championing heavy spending across his two terms. Public debt rose by $7.8 trillion during Trump's first term, with more than half of it accumulating during the pandemic response over his last 9 months in office. Since Trump took office a second time in January of 2025, the U.S. debt load has increased by $3.8 trillion, for total growth of $11.6 trillion across his two terms so far. Public debt increased by $8.4 trillion during Biden's term, also marked by heavy COVID-19 recovery spending, but driven as well by big-ticket outlays for infrastructure investment, clean energy subsidies, and other priorities championed by his Democratic Party. The Committee for Responsible Federal Budget estimates that the policy choices of Trump and Biden have increased the federal debt trajectory beyond what would have accumulated under the existing spending statutes when each took office. For instance, Trump's landmark second-term legislative package, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, will add another $4.7 trillion in debt, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the nonpartisan bookkeeper for federal lawmakers. Trump has branded his second presidency as one focused on cost-cutting, marked by early federal agency job cuts ordered by the non-governmental Department of Government Efficiency. But much of his spending reductions have targeted so-called discretionary programs, the smallest portion of the federal budget. The United States spends roughly $7 trillion annually, and 60% of it is earmarked for so-called mandatory programs, including payments for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and veterans care that generally grow to keep pace with cost of living. Another $1.1 trillion pays the interest on U.S. borrowing, the cost of which rises as the debt pile grows and as interest rates climb. The 2025 fiscal year budget marked the first time debt service costs exceeded Pentagon funding. In the first 10 months of 2026 fiscal year, interest costs have eclipsed Medicare healthcare outlays to become the second largest line item in the federal budget, behind the Social Security pension system. The United States is spending more to fund the retirement and health care costs of the baby boom generation, straining the trust funds behind Social Security and Medicare, even as payroll and income tax revenues fall short of covering federal costs. More lawmakers face allegations. Accusers' attorneys say Congress must act to end harassment and assault, by Emily R. Condon and Zachary Schmiel. A woman is accusing a California Democratic lawmaker of sexual assault and harassment, according to her attorneys. The allegations against Representative Jimmy Gomez, who denies any wrongdoing, come amid a widespread reckoning that's been rocking Capitol Hill for months, prompting several high-profile resignations and campaign suspensions. They add to an increasing pile of scandals plaguing both Republicans and Democrats as the midterm elections approach. The lawyers for the woman accusing Gomez of misconduct said the probe highlighted a broad and disturbing pattern. "This is just the latest example of brazen sexual misconduct by a member of Congress," they said. "Congress must act to rein in its members who seem to believe that preying on young women working on Capitol Hill is one of the perks of their job." On August 17th, the House Ethics Committee announced it was investigating whether Gomez, who has represented a region of Los Angeles since 2017, may have engaged in sexual misconduct in violation of congressional conduct rules, including engaging in inappropriate sexual contact with a House staffer. It is unclear from the allegations whether the woman represented by attorneys is the House staffer referenced by the committee or when the events reportedly happened. In statements shared with multiple outlets after the panel launched its probe, the congressman admitted to having made, quote, personal mistakes outside his marriage, but emphasized they were consensual in nature and nothing he did violated ethics rules. Several days later, two lawyers issued a statement disputing that assertion. Contrary to Representative Gomez's assertion in his statement, his actions were not consensual in nature with respect to our client, wrote the lawyers Lisa J. Banks and Sarah E. Nesbitt, who said they represented one of the women interviewed by the Ethics Committee. Gomez's office did not respond to USA Today's inquiries about the allegations. The investigation is not proof of any wrongdoing by Gomez, according to Representative Michael Guest, Republican, Mississippi, the chair of the Ethics Committee, and California Representative Mark DeSaulnier, the top Democrat on the panel. The committee notes that the mere fact that it is investigating these allegations and publicly disclosing its review does not itself indicate that any violation has occurred, the pair wrote in a joint news release. Misconduct accusations over the past few months have triggered a slew of ethics investigations, campaign suspensions, and even resignations from Congress. The accusations targeted members of both parties from multiple states. In April, Representative Eric Swalwell, Democrat, California, stepped down from Congress, where he faced an ethics probe and potential expulsion after several women accused him of sexual assault and misconduct, allegations he denied. Representative Tony Gonzalez, Republican of Texas, resigned within an hour of Swalwell and admitted he'd had an extramarital affair with a staffer who died by self-immolation after the relationship ended. And unfortunately, that's all the time with the Brockton Enterprise, but have a wonderful, wonderful weekend.